Christian Imhoff, ladies and gentlemen, British champion now, formidable NCAA star as well, medalist in the steeplechase there, replicating what Jermaine Coleman did a few years back. But firstly, mate, how's the last week been? I know you've had messages off everyone, including us. We're very lucky to have you. We're very delighted to have you on this week.
No, it's an absolute pleasure, and I appreciate you giving me the message to come on. Yeah, it's been hectic. It's been nice, though. Finally got a little bit of time off, just a few days. So yeah, took time to just soak it all in and chill.
And we were just talking then about the commies announcement was today. You're on the team. That's something you had to keep quiet for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a very nice call to get. But yeah, I think I got the call before champ. So it's been a while waiting to, you know, let everyone know and stuff. But nah, it's a really cool, exciting thing. And to be selected with your brother, yeah, it's quite nice.
Yeah, I look for it's go Team England, let's go. Have you had a chance to just sort of start to plan now ahead of the commies and what is probably definitely, well, and the Euros, you know, you've got that auto cue for the Euros as well. Were you thinking about that 12 months ago? Were you thinking about commies and Euros, or were you just very fixated on NCAA and trying to do a job there?
It's a bit of both. Commies and Euros were the dream scenario, but I was so focused on NCAAs because I really thought I could get the win. Probably the only people that believed I could was me and my coach. I was in shape. I was in really good shape last year. Like really, really good shape, and unfortunately fell, which, you know, got clowned for quite a bit. But, you know, big falls come for bigger comebacks and all that sort of stuff. Mia, my coach over there, does a really good job at like actually making me believe in myself more. And, you know, we were just talking about it for what was 2 years now. I sat in the stands after my first time there and I was just like, I can win this race. I know I can. Like, they're not doing anything that I can't do. And she said, let's do it. And 2 years later, I'm in the shape of my life. And we'd actually produced the performance at the regional meet to show that I'm in that sort of shape and that I could win. Unfortunately, it didn't quite get the job done. But, you know, third was a huge jump for me.
It was a massive jump, especially the two guys ahead of you. What were their lifetime best? Isn't one of them an 8.0 guy?
8.08, yeah, he ran, which is, yeah, that's absolutely insane. I mean, it's right next to the British record. So yeah, would have been a special performance to beat him. And then the other guy was Silas. He's a very, very good performer as well. He's 18 lifetime best as well. So
That sort of self-belief is a little bit like the chicken and egg, isn't it? You know, the scenario, what comes first? Is it the shape and then you believe, or is it the belief and then the shape kind of comes after that? And kind of sounds like you believed and then you were able to get yourself into that shape.
Yeah, I mean, once you see glimpses of it, I feel like it makes it easier to believe. Like the past couple of years, obviously, I've just struggled with injuries so much. But then you start to see glimpses and you start to race well, you start winning a few races, and then you start to believe it a bit more. And I think this year was no different. I've been running really, really well. I actually didn't run at all in cross country. I was injured again, like annoying little setbacks. Went to altitude, got back into shape, got back on the track, started racing again, started loving it again. And, you know, I remember saying to Brad, who's on the team at EKU, I was just like, I'm going to run 8.15 this year. And now I'm thinking, okay, I might run quicker than 8.15 this year. And I had a workout, my last hard steeple workout before regionals. Got the Vega twins from Argentina to help me out over the barriers. And, you know, I was just flying, like absolutely flying. And I was like, okay, we're going to do something. And then regionals sort of backed that up as well.
You think being in the NCAA allowed you to start to think that way? Because it is quite, I would say America in general is, in England, we do a good job at making sure everyone stays humble, you know, taking everyone down a peg. Whereas in America, it's the complete opposite, right? It's like, you go, man, go get what's yours. Yeah. And do you think just putting yourself in that environment helped bring that belief out of you as well?
Yeah, 100%, 100%, and I love it because I've been talking about it for a while with my mates and stuff. The comparison between Josh Kerr and Jake Whiteman, and it's like their attitudes and the way they come across are so different, but they have the same self belief. Like Josh Kerr is very arrogant, like that's what he comes across. I love it personally. I think it's great. But the whole world record thing, like, I'm going to do it at this time, at this date, come watch me. Love it. Like, so cool. And
yeah, you'd never hear Whiteman say that.
No, you wouldn't. And yet, I love that as well. I love that he's just quiet and then we'll just come out and win a world medal. That's crazy. So, yeah, I think I feel like I'm in the bit of a middle of both. Like, I'm now getting to the point where I'm confident in myself, but I also don't want to come across as a dick, so...
Yeah, do you think you would have grown into the athlete you are today then, claiming that British title in a really good fashion, NCAA medals, aggressive racing, if you stayed at Birmingham?
Yeah.
Look at me, I'm forcing you down a horrible trap here. No, but okay, I'll rephrase this.
I get what you're saying, and no would be the answer. I wouldn't. But it's more on me than anyone else. One of the things that helped me actually was my last year at Birmingham. I went in as a 8:55 steepler there, and I left an 8:55 steepler. That's all on me. I wasn't serious enough. I was getting injured and then partying and then partying and then getting injured. Like, that's uncoachable, in my opinion. You can't do anything with that. And I, at that point, felt really bad for Dean because he put a lot of time and effort into me and I didn't repay him for that. And on my way out of there, Gunny sat me down because I was looking at coming to the States because it was a last chance thing. I was like, I'm going to the States or I'm pretty much done running. That was where I was at. And Gunny sat me down and he was like, I hate what you've done the past 3 years and wasted all your talent. And I was like, at the time, I was like, what does this guy know? And now I've told him and I've looked back on it, I've gone, damn, he was so right. He was so right. So yeah, I wouldn't be the same athlete, but I'm also so thankful for the experience because I went to EKU, got an unbelievable coach, and now I'm running quicker than I've ever run before in my life. So
yeah, do you think that period is it, it's a classic debate, isn't it? And a lot of people talk about it, you know, their first few years of uni, not serious enough. Do you think it's age? Is that an age issue or is that just the environment didn't inspire you to be serious enough at that time? Because I do think when you go to America and, you know, someone is effectively paying you to be there, everyone around you, it does just have that extra level of professionalism where you almost feel like, okay, I've got to step up as well. Yeah. So do you feel like you just had to live that period in your life?
Yeah, I think so. Because if you ask me about it, I don't regret it at all because it's made me who I am and all of that sort of cringy crap. But I think if I'd not gone injured, would it have been different? Yes. Because the only reason why I started doing the other stuff was because I got injured. And, you know, that environment is much bigger here, I'm going to say, than in the States because you are paid. You're basically a professional athlete. I think in some instances, you've got it better than professional athletes. It's a very tough scene to be in, to try and remain professional when all your friends are going out and getting drunk and partying or whatever, and then you have a sniff of that lifestyle and then you go the other way and you're like, oh, running takes a back seat. So yeah, it's really tough. And then as soon as you get out to the States and you're like, oh, I need to fix up because they're not going to let this run.
Did you ever think about going? I mean, you were an incredible junior as well, England vests, you know, youth vests. So did you ever think about it at age 18? Why Birmingham over the States at that time in your life?
Yeah, I wasn't mature enough. Like, if I'd have gone out to the States, I'd have just been mauled, I think. I just probably didn't know how to cook a decent meal, didn't know how to use a washing machine, didn't know how to clean a dish, you know what I mean? Just those little things.
Do you think athletically you would have just been eaten alive as well?
Potentially, because I was so injury prone. I honestly couldn't tell you how many injuries I got at Birmingham, but I was with Becky in physio every week for 3 years. So wow. Our relationship is great, but you know, that's not great, is it? So,
got a good physio.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And how come you were able to, sounds like you haven't even strung 12 months together yet. You know, you were still a bit injured at the start of the winter, but how have you managed to string sort of 6 to 8 months of really good training together now then?
Yeah, it's kind of substituting cross training in for sure. Working with really great medical people. I was saying we traveled 6 hours to go see a doctor in Indiana to get assessed about a recurring injury that I was having, a stress response that I'd had for, it was my first big injury, and then I've had it for 2-3 years on the bounce now. So yeah, it was something that I needed to get sorted, and I'm hoping it's behind me, and we've put a lot of work in. I've put so much like overtime in, so to speak, in that sort of sense. And yeah, just all those one percenters, getting them right and keep them adding up to get me healthy, because I know I can do what I've been doing if I stay healthy.
And that's the stress response that's just coming back at the, in the same place every time. That's crazy.
Yep. Exact same area. Yeah. It's the most frustrating thing you can imagine, because you think you're doing everything right, and then it comes back and you're like, okay, so I'll change this and I'll change this. And it gets to the point where you're like, okay, so I literally can't do anything else, and let's just keep fingers crossed and hope what I've done works. Mm. And you know, this year has been a lot better, and yeah, I mean,
do you know, to keep that belief when, yeah, fall at NCAAs, get another injury at the start of this winter, to sort of have that belief that you had through everything is well, testament to you. And I hope it shows other people as well that just how important that self-belief is.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing that I'm just trying to get across to everyone, you know, that stay locked in, keep it going, keep persevering, because it will get better. It does get better. You keep working hard and keep wanting to achieve your goals, you're going to. For me, it took a lot longer than I thought it was going to do. I got that GB vest in 2019. Mm. I got a call up in 2021, but it was COVID and all of that sort of stuff. So it's now been seven years since I'll have represented my country. And if you asked me back then, I'd have gone, I'm going to have won the Olympics by then. You know what I mean? Like it's already going to have happened. So every path is different. Every graph is not linear. Like there's so many more downs than ups in this sport, but it makes the ups 10 times sweeter, you know?
Mm. Yeah. As a sort of fresh 18-year-old, obviously you can look back now, but it's easy to not appreciate just how hard that transition is into just making a senior team. When you make those junior teams, you think, oh, well, I just need to keep going on this trajectory. But keeping going on that trajectory is very, very difficult.
Yeah. More distractions come in the older you get, in every sense of life. And when you're young, you're just a bit more naive. But I think that's why we have so much success, because we race so well when we're all young. Like in terms of GB with our cross country track, we have so many internationals that compete, get European medals, go on the world stage. And, you know, I feel like I'm back racing like I was 17, not a care in the world who's on the start line, just go out there and race and race to win. And I love it.
Yeah. And I think that's something the NCAA does do. We're seeing it a lot more in the UK, and I think the UK is definitely catching up, but the NCAA does do well in that regard. And when you look at the way people close in the NCAA, specifically for me, whether it's a 1500, whether it's a 5K, whether it's a steeple, you just get exposed to guys running in steeple 58, 59 last laps. And regularly as well. It's not like you're in a pace race and you muster up a 64 and you run an 8:20 or whatever. It's like any race you're in, there will be guys running 58, 59, 60 for that last lap, no matter the pace. And I just think we you know, that style of racing is just a massive, if you know you can do that, which you can, and you do acknowledge you can do that, it sets you up, doesn't it? For even Diamond Leagues, it sets you up for the highest level.
100%, 100%. And it's crazy. I know I've got a good close. I know I can close on any distance, really. I ran, I think we ran 64, 63, and then I ran a 60 and got dropped. They ran NCAA a 58. Yeah. In the NCAA final. Yeah. It's insane. Like 203 lost 800 and you're not going to catch him. It's, you know, it's one of those things, but it's also quite nice that I know where I need to improve now. I know what I've got to do. And yeah, it's exciting.
Do you train for that? Is that, you know, you acknowledge that if I'm going to win an NCAA title, I probably need to run a sub 60 last lap. How do you train for that? Or is it like, I just need to get myself as fit as possible and hope that I'm going to have enough, the race is going to bring the best out of me?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. Like we don't train the speed aspect over the barriers too often, but we'll do a good amount of quality work over the barriers and then have a couple 400s at the end where you're probably pushing. And, you know, I've hit, without the water jump, 53s, 54s over the hurdles.
Over five barriers?
Yeah. Yeah.
that is very impressive.
Then you get smoked by two Kenyans in an 8:18 race. Like it's insane. So I know I've got the speed. I think it is a bit about getting a bit stronger. Like, but yeah, it's exciting to be in this shape and to be putting it together in championship races and just to be healthy and on the start line. Yeah, it's exciting.
Well, yeah. And when you look at the highest level as well, when you look at the Europeans, you look at Alex Milet winning in 2024, Kick, 1500 guys stepping up, Jordi Beamish, Kenneth Rooks, you know, these are all men who have struck a medal or gold at a majors in the last few years, and it's all come down to a very, very fast last 300, last 400.
Yeah, I think it's one of the plays at the moment because everyone thinks they've got the best kick. Mm. And it's like, okay, if you can actually train it a bit and actually know you've got a better kick than most, then you're going to be in chances for a medal. So yeah, it's a really exciting period. I think there's a lot of development and improvement to be had just over the flat as well. Like my flat times are pretty horrendous. So to get out of the NCAA, hopefully into the pro ranks and be able to dictate my own season and talk with Mia, my coach, about what we're going to do, what we're going to race. And it doesn't have to be steeple, 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 steeple. It's going to be really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in many ways, though, when you look at the next 2 years now, 27's a world champs, 28's, obviously you've got Euros, 28's going to be Olympic Games and another world champs as well. So a really good three-year cycle. Do you think that's sometimes where people, I think steeplers do go wrong a little bit is, I mean, I know we see Jordi Beamish do great things indoors, but, you know, we don't often see Alba Cali run over the flat, you know, and a lot of steeplers tend to just have to focus on their event.
Yeah, it's a really tough spot to be in because you've got to get points. You've got to get the time and you've got to get points. And with the times they've just announced for the world champs, it's a bit scary. But hopefully the British ones are a little bit easier than that. But I don't see a reason why you can't have a few good steeples in the calendar and also do flat races, because I don't think at this moment you can just be a good steepler. I think you have to be a very quick 5K guy and a very quick 15 guy. And then you also have to get over the barriers.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely agree with that one. You probably haven't even thought about it because your objective was NCAAs, it was commies, it was Euros. Now, do you look at your career and go, okay, how do I continue to put myself in an environment like I was in the NCAAs? Like, how do I replicate this season next year and the year after to sort of bring the best out of me?
Yeah, it's really, really tough. It is, because the one thing the NCAA is really good for is it gives you a structure. Mm. Every race is on the calendar and that's what you need to do and that's what you need to be ready for. And so when you turn pro, it's kind of like, okay, you pick and choose when and where you're going to race, and a lot of people don't race nearly as much, and I think it can be detrimental but can also be beneficial. So I think for me the main thing is going back to my coach. Like, I'm not going to change that at all because it's clearly working. And then sitting down at the start of the season and and planning what our goals are, because I think we're both very ambitious and want the most out of it. And so it's going to be pretty easy to get those goals. It's just about how we get there.
Yeah. Is your eligibility up? Or have you
I've exhausted that.
Yeah, I thought so. Do you plan on going back there and living in that, you know, living on campus or in and around that area for the next year or two, just taking a bit of a gamble, mate? How are you going to survive? How are you going to live? Hopefully get a pro contract, I guess.
That's going to be the hope, man. That's going to be the hope. Hopefully, because unsponsored and everything at the moment, like, you got to try and, make ends meet somehow, but you know, that's the gamble. That's how we play, and I'm hoping that the shape I'm in and being selected for these competitions shows what kind of shape I'm in, and then I'm going to go out and hopefully prove it at these champs.
Definitely, and I think that's you obviously recognize what you had out there. Would it have been an easy decision? Did you weigh it up coming home at all and seeing what you can replicate at home, whether it's getting back in that Birmingham setup, whether that's, you know, basing yourself somewhere else in the UK? Did you consider anything else? Or you obviously, with the success you've had, it's an easy decision, but I just wanted to be from the UK.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's lovely being home, and I think I could have success being in Birmingham. I mean, Tom Eyre was really trying to get me to go back up there and set up a little group. And they're going to have a ton of success, because I know Dean's an unbelievable coach, and the group they're going to have is really, really good as well. But this coach, Mia, got me from 8:55 to 8:18 and hopefully a bit quicker. And I'm kind of like, if it's working that well, why would I pack my bags and go to a group, whether it's at home or whether I go to a different group in the US? Like, for me, it doesn't make a ton of sense.
So, I respect it. Yeah, I respect it. And yeah, I think a lot more people need to have that sort of aggressive approach to their career, because one of the mistakes I think a lot of people make, and potentially you, when you talk about those early years at university, is especially when you're young in this country, a lot of people say, oh, you've got next year. Yeah. I think we definitely have that mindset at universities where everyone's like, first year, it's fine. I've got 2 or 3 years of this. And then, you know, you get to the end of uni and you're like, maybe I'll work for a bit. I've still got 2 or 3 more years, but it quickly goes by, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And that's the thing that you don't get over in the States. It's, you're 18 and you're expected to score a conference, make a regional meet, and try and get to nationals. Like, that's the expectation. They're paying like 30 grand for you, something like that, probably more in some scenarios. It's like they expect results. And I think there is a bit of a stigma around the US. It's like they overtrain you, overrace you, and stuff like that. And, you know, for me in my situation, it hasn't been the case at all. I'm not a high mileage guy. I do a ton of cross training on top. And we are lucky to not be in one of those top conferences. So I go and run the 1500 and won that. So it's like, if you can pick and choose where you go, just make sure it's the right decision, and the NCAA is going to be really, really good for you.
Could you pick and choose where you went? As an 855 steepler, going in as a master's student, did you have many options? How did you land with EK?
My situation was probably quite irregular in terms of, I think I messaged in end of July, start of August, and was out September 1st. I had no offers.
Wow.
I was emailing schools. I went through the entire NCAA, got out my email, messaged head coach, CC'd in the assistant coaches, and just sent an email saying my time, what I'd done, and hoping that I'd hear back from some people. And I heard back from a few schools, and a few schools said, if you run 8:45 in the steeple, you're more than welcome here. And EKU came back and was just like, we've got no money left. We can give you a 70% scholarship, which didn't cover everything. So I was paying a bit out of pocket to go there. And then I made nationals my first year and got bumped straight up. And the rest is a bit of history. So
You, in many ways, landed on your feet, because obviously it's a steeple specialist school as well. But you must wonder if one of those other schools came back a little bit earlier, you probably would have ended up going there.
Yeah, yeah. Who knows? Who knows? It's quite funny. I go through my Instagram DMs from years ago, like when I was 18 and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And you see the offers you get from there and you're like, oh, damn. Like back then I didn't realize, but that's a good school that I could have gone to and things like that. But yeah, I wouldn't change it for the world, because imagine you go out, an 18-year-old, you go to, I don't know, an Oregon or whatever kids like dream about going to. And then they ruin you. Like, you know, I think my way worked out for me. And it's a way that I'd recommend to everyone, to be honest.
It really has done. It's funny because on the outside, you just think, oh, that was intentional. You know, he's gone to Eastern Kentucky. They have a great history of good steeplers. That was intentional. Maybe that was his plan all along. What a smart guy. He went to Birmingham, then he, you know, under Luke Gunn and Dean, and graduates, then goes to EKU. But actually, there's a lot more to it.
I tell you how stupid I am, okay? And this story sums up my career and my life, all right? So NCAA prelims this year. I'm like, we get told that it's high allergy warning, like take your allergy medicine, whatever. So I'm taking this medicine. I'm in the call room yawning, so tired. I don't know what's going on. I'm on the start line. I'm slapping myself in the face to try and get hyped up. Ends up being okay. We run 8:26. I'm like, what is going on? I can't believe this. This is terrible. Ends up of taking drowsy allergy medicine. So I'm sleeping like 10 hours a night, waking up feeling horrible. Yeah. And I'm just like, you are an absolute moron. Like, you couldn't be more stupid.
But that is, let's talk about Eugene, because those allergies, everyone always talks about the allergies in Eugene, mm-hmm. but people still run really, really fast there.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know why? I don't know. I didn't think it was too bad, to be honest, but the meet as a whole is just crazy. It's so elite that there was a 110 hurdles world record.
Oh, I know.
Like that, the stadium went absolutely nuts. I mean, it's an unbelievably cool meet. Definitely one of the coolest stadiums you'll ever run in, you know? Yeah. And it's like really nerve-wracking as well. So it's a good mix of everything.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot on the line there, hey? So then, I want to talk about the training a little bit. You've touched upon not being a high-mileage guy, getting in your cross training, you know, having quite an injury riddled pass. But yeah, you did go from an 8:55 guy to an 8:18 guy in 3 years.
Yeah.
8:30 to 8:18 in 12 months is nuts. And I know you say I was in better shape. I was ready to go at the NCAAs, didn't get the opportunity post NCAAs to get it out. But like that, it's incredible improvements.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And it's testament to Mia and her dedication on me, because I'm sure I've not been the easiest athlete to coach, to be honest. But like, to be fair, when she says do something, I do it, no questions asked, and all of that sort of stuff. But I spent years saying like, oh, I'm so much better than 8:55, like I just need to get in the right race. And then when you never do it, you kind of like, you just look like a bit of a mug and all of that sort of stuff. So yeah, I kind of remember I raced really poorly for cross country and indoors my first year. And I think it's the acclimatization period of being in the NCAA and how intense it is and stuff like that. And then my first outdoor race was 8:42 steeple. So already a massive like improvement. And then like winning Penn relays that year was like so cool. And then yeah, making nationals and stuff like that. I just saw steady improvement, which was really, really nice. But I also trained quite well. These past couple of years, like I knew I was due for a big breakthrough, because last year I'd ran 8:30 four times. So I knew that I could run quicker. It was just a matter of time and when. And the only issue with that is whether you get the opportunity to run quicker again. Because that's the frustrating thing. Like I can shout out from the rooftops, can't I, that I can run quicker. But if you never get back to that shape, then you're never going to find out. And it was a bit similar coming into the champs, ran 8:20 twice in two very different ways. And I was like, okay, so I know I can run quicker. It's just whether you get in the right race. And the champs honestly felt so much better than I expected them to feel. Like that first K did not feel like a 2:42, you know, like it felt...
They opened the Diamond League. I think the Diamond League was about that yesterday. 2:42, yeah, 2:41 first K. Weird. And you guys ran the same at champs.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, it just didn't feel like it. It felt like I could go a bit earlier, go a bit sooner. But obviously the main goal was to win. So, yeah, sorry to the other boys, but I was kind of like never going to take the lead in that. And I knew Zach wasn't going to either because he was the only one with the time. So he was probably loving life. But yeah, I was just, it felt so much more comfortable than I thought it would coming off the back of the travel and racing and all of that. And yeah, to run 8:18 and know there's more in the legs still is a really, really cool feeling. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because for me, what's been very impressive about your season, and it's like if people string multiple good 5Ks back to back, is the recovery time between your races. You know, even at the NCAs or regionals was what, 10 days pre-NCAs, you go 8:20, then you go 8:26, then you go 8:20, then you go 8:18, four steeples in the space of probably 3 weeks or maybe a month.
Yeah, something like that.
And anyone who's done a steeple, I mean, if anyone's done a 5K, it's a pretty similar recovery process. You know, no one in their right mind is going to run very close to their PB over 5K four weekends in a row at all in four very different races as well. You know, one's a heat, finals, British champs, you know, whole different climate. And so that's, how have you managed to get your body to a place? And is there anything you do in training which allows you to recover that well between races? Or is it simply you're even fitter than what you've produced, clearly?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of that, but also we've talked so much about recovery and how important it is and doing absolutely everything you can to recover is just so important. So like straight after the race, I was first one out of the NCAA semi-final, sorry. I was first one out of the 10. On my jog and then in the ice bath straight away. Because who knows, if they're standing around for 10 minutes, that's advantaged me. And that's just the way I think you've got to look at these things is, are you doing things better than all the people you're going to race? And then, yeah, just coming back for champs, you know, it's one of those where I can take an Epsom salt bath, I can do all these things, but it's just going to be about what's up here. And can you just get it done? Can you get focused again? Because NCAAs was the main goal of the season. That was everything to me. So to get back in the mood of racing, get back in the mood of trying to win, that was sort of the, it feels like a bit of a turning point that I'm just like, okay, so I can run fast on tired legs, on a tired body, on a tired mind. Okay. I know I can do something good, you know?
Yeah, how long did that process take to get yourself fired up for champs?
You know what, it was probably the day before I was like, okay, we're ready to race, like mentally. Yeah, it was just, usually I get so into a race and I'm like, okay, the week, 2 weeks before, I'm thinking about it and I'm processing it. I'm like, okay, how could it be run? What can I do, type thing? And then this one was just like, okay, recovering from the race and also mentally just going like, okay, that was 3 years worth of effort in one race. I need to chill. I need to just take that all in. Cause that was the feeling straight after the race as well. It felt so strange. Like you've got your trophy, you've just done something that probably no one else thought you could do. And my instant feeling was like, what's this? What's going on? Like it wasn't in being insanely happy or something like that, which is so weird for me, like so strange. But, you know, took a day to process that and then, yeah, fly home, try and start thinking about another race when the last thing I want to do is race again. And then, yeah, day before British Champs, I was like, okay, we're ready. We can go again. And yeah, I was locked in at that point.
Yeah, the recovery process you mentioned between races, is that something you also take seriously in and around training? You know, that sort of like after training session, giving yourself that 10-minute leg up on other people who are going to stand around and chat or you know, bask themselves in the heat post session, whatever it is. Do you take that approach on a daily basis as well?
100%. Yeah, I think it's definitely harder to do day to day, but once you get into a routine, it's pretty easy. But yeah, straight after workouts or sessions, you go straight upstairs and stretch and make sure you get your fuel in, make sure you're getting your electrolytes in, and just as soon as possible, because your body needs to like start kind of healing again, I guess. So yeah, I do take that really seriously, I guess. And you know, some people who don't take this sport that seriously don't like it, and you know, who cares?
Yeah,
if you want to be good at this sport, you'll do what you want to do, won't you? So
yeah, I think everyone is seeing that. One final point that I want to sort of talk about is the technique versus fitness aspect of the steeplechase, the ratio of technique to fitness, the priorities at potentially different points in the season. You're going to prioritize just your base fitness over the technique and vice versa. So yeah, how much time, I guess, for you who's been at it for years, it's probably a little different to others who are maybe transitioning to the event, but how much time are you spending working that technique and getting out over those barriers?
Yeah, do you know what it is? It is a lot. Like, if it was ideal, I would have started in and around Christmas, just doing drills, not necessarily going over barriers, but starting to do the hurdle work. Unfortunately, I was in Colorado and didn't have access to hurdles, so made it a bit more difficult, but all year round sort of doing hip mobility drills and things like that. And then kind of when indoor season is nearly up, you start going over barriers just twice a week, the day before workouts. We usually have strides anyway, so we just incorporate some hurdles into it, and you know, the whole process probably takes half an hour doing hurdle drills, and then doing 5 to 6 runovers, and then we don't really start water jump practice for a good few weeks after that. And typically we do that into the sand just to reduce impact on the lower body.
Yeah. No, decent. I mean, definitely, yeah, your hurdling, especially your waters, have just looked so strong. Even last lap, you know, a lot of fatigue in there, running fast as well. You've looked very, very strong this year. I've also got to ask, why did you choose the steeple all those years ago, you know, to get those, to go to English school, to get those youth vests, GB youth vests in the steeple? Why did you choose it?
That was all down to my old coach, Stephen Murphy, who was a great steepler in his own right as well. He coached 2 or 3 athletes, and 2 of us were GB international steeplechasers, and he didn't have a coaching license and all of that sort of stuff. And he was just like, uh-oh, doing it because, yeah. And he was doing it because we were at school with him. So he's our PE teacher.
Oh my God, he was just doing that.
Yeah. And, you know, he's just one of those guys that could get you motivated for painting a wall, you know, like the moment you talked, yeah, he talked, you listened, that type of guy. And he's incredible, and I still talk to him now and stuff. And yeah, he was just like, I'm gonna chuck you over the barriers, so let's see how it goes. And in the first year, I won English schools in the 15 steeple and nationals and all of that, and then got my the year after, I think 2019, I ran 1 2K chase and then went straight up to the 3K and got my first GB vest in that. So yeah, it was pretty surreal. But yeah, technique wise has never been my strong suit. Like my hurdling, if you watch Mark, Will, Zach, like they all hurdle so much better than me. But I've learned that it doesn't really matter how you get over them. It's like, just forget about the hurdle and get over it and get to the next one. And of course, once you get to the higher standards, I think to bridge the gap between an 810 and an 805, if you can hurdle really well off both legs and do all that, then that will probably help. But my water jumps have always been like a really strong factor for me. And, you know, I won bucks off of attacking the water jump. And I would say that the British champs was also winning off the water jump and pressing quite hard. So, yeah, like you can have the best technique you want, but if you're not going to attack them and get over them quickly, it's not going to matter.
I totally agree with that. And I've always noticed with the steeple, one of the big things for me is athletes need to be able to cope with the fatigue of the event. You need to be very, very strong. And look, you can have the best technique in the world, but if you can only keep it up for 20 hurdles and then you start to, you know, your pace starts to suffer because of it, then it's pointless. Whereas if you, you might be a little untidy over the jumps, but hey, if you're still, you know, if it's not eating into your fatigue, if you're not tying up, if you're not having to drop your pace and it's a little messy, that's a much better place to be. And a lot of people, I think, when they start out on their steeple journey, they underestimate that, or they don't appreciate. They almost, when you're a beginner, you're like, oh, I just need to get my technique better. But actually, you need to get stronger. You need to be able to bounce off these hurdles much better.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of that is the plyos side of it, doing a ton of plyometrics and, yeah, just making sure you're resistant to coming down on one leg and being able to push forward rather than kind of stopping yourself coming when you come over the hurdle and getting going again, you know? I think a lot of people care a bit too much about the technique. And I want to say that in a bit, like, I don't know what the word is, but don't want people to read into it too much, you know? Like, you've still got to care. You've still got to have good hip mobility. You've still got to be able to get your lead leg out and down quickly and your trail leg round so you're not smacking it off a barrier. But not every hurdle has to be perfect. You don't have to look like a 110 hurdler. You've just got to get over them and focus on the next one.
Yeah. And you get to a point where those hurdles take nothing out of you, then you can get closer and closer to your flat 3K speed. If you're getting close to that and that conversion is 20 odd seconds, then you're going to be in a great place. You're going to have a massive leg up over a lot of guys. What a terrific episode. And truly, truly grateful. Wish you all the best. I mean, I guess as we finish, what's the aspirations for commies, Euros? I guess you're still processing who's going to be there, how you're going to attack it. Commies is obviously a straight final. That's going to be very exciting in itself, how you approach that race. But yeah, where's your head at around both of those big championships?
Yeah, I mean, first senior final made, right? So only up from here. I'm not one to hide or shy away from it. I have high expectations, and you know, I feel like you've got to speak to them into existence. The A goal, I suppose, so to speak, is a medal at Commonwealths and making that final at Europeans. Because I think if you make the final, then anything can happen, and a medal's not off the cards. But you know, everyone's running so well, but they don't have a British crowd behind them, do they? So that can carry you over them.
There we go. And a big opportunity, especially at Euros, because I think it will be inside the World Champs window to make sure you get those ranking points ahead of 2027.
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously will come with the performance, hopefully. But it'll definitely be something to keep an eye out on. For sure.
Mate, what did Mark and Will say to you post champs, or even when they saw you running 8:20, they must have been like, how the fuck's he done that? You know, he left us 2 years ago, and now he's smoking us at champs running 8:18.
Do you know what? So I saw Zach straight after, and he was like, oh, you're going to commies, yeah? And I was like, I thought we couldn't tell anyone. So that was quite funny. But no, do you know what? It's so hard because all the guys are like absolutely lovely. Like they're the nicest people you'll meet. And so Mark was trying to speak to me before the race, and I was kind of being like bit of a dick, just like one word answers, like trying to be locked in. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll talk to you after type thing. But no, they're all like so nice. And then we're just chatting underneath about what's going to happen basically. And I would love to see a fast race for them all to get in and to all come to Euros, to be honest, because you know, if Will gets the time, I think I feel like they've got to take Zach as well for the 8:15. And you know, three Brits in a European champs, something's going to happen. You know, you just have that feeling that something's going to happen.
Yeah, and we'd love to see, I think, a couple in the final, because you know, having Elise fly the flag for the women and Lizzie Bird pre that, and the way the steeple sets up this year, it's wide open. I know there's loads of, if you watch the Diamond League and there's loads of guys running between 8:10 and 8:15, but they are doing, they've got that opportunity in the Diamond League, and actually that cluster of men around 8:12 to 8:16 is massive. It's going to be really close who makes the final, but once you're in that final, I think anything, you know, you could finish, like you said, you could sneak a medal, or you could come 15th. It's kind of, if you make that final, you give yourself a chance because it is just so close.
Yeah, I think the term that anything can happen is like very true for the steeple. There are big barriers in the way, and those barriers are very unforgiving, and you know, it takes one little mistake and then suddenly there's a medal there for you. So yeah, I would love to see as many people go to these champs as possible, because I think that's what helps younger athletes as well come through, and you know, try and make steeple a bit cool for them.
Absolutely. Well, look, Chris Imroth, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very, very much, mate. And yeah, best of luck at Commies. Is that going to be your next race? Is that next time we'll see you, Commonwealth Games?
Yeah, that is the next time you'll see me. Yeah, thanks so much for having me on as well.
Thank you.